There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Radio Book Club. Members only.
Aklan Baluki, Festival Director at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, is here. My computer has typoed your name, it's spelt it wrong, and it's called you Alma. It's like a Coronation Street character. It's cute though, you could be an Alma or an Aklan.
Alma means apple in Turkish, actually.
Does it?
Yeah.
Do you speak Turkish as well?
No, I don't, but I came across the word when I was in Turkey earlier this year.
You could have just said, yeah, I'm fluent in Turkish too. So welcome back. It's good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you. It's always great to be here.
We're going to talk about a little bit of book news, first of all. Mm-hmm. And this is quite interesting. A study's been done where someone with a clipboard went out and asked a lot of grown-ups, if they had to read one children's book again, what would it be? My first thoughts were, I don't know if I'd want to read a children's book as an adult. Do you?
So there's two things. One is that I'm so sad that I missed out on reading as a child because I didn't. The first time I fell in love with a book, I was actually 18. So I missed out on, you know, an entire childhood of reading.
Even at school, they didn't force you to read books at school.
They did, but you know when it's forced, it's not, it doesn't resonate as much and it feels like studying. It's not,
yes,
it's not the same as, you know, finding that book and then really connecting to a story or reading it by choice or reading it for fun. And unfortunately, I wasn't read to as a child and things like that, so I don't like link it back to bonding parenting time or anything like that.
Yeah, there's so much emphasis these days on reading to your children, it being a big part of bedtime routine. I never had it either.
But I think it's definitely because you've got to kind of, in one way or another, separate it from the studies. I think that's why kids, like, usually when they look at a book, they relate it to their school books as well. You've got to really encourage them to read in a very different setting. And if, you know, it reminds them of snuggling up in bed with a parent and bonding time, and the parent is quite animated in the way that they read to them, I think it would be very easy to love a book that way.
Although, don't you think we make a great argument for it doesn't really matter if you read to them or not, because if they love books, they're going to love them anyway.
It's true. It's true. But we miss out on the nostalgia. Like when I looked through the list of books that adults want to reread as grown-ups, I love all of those stories because I watch them as cartoons. So I'd love to go back and watch those films, whether it's Alice in Wonderland or whether it's Wizard of Oz, or, you know, I've seen all of the animations and I get the sense of wanting to go back and revisit something as an adult, Mary Poppins or whatever it might be, because it takes you back to that place one way or another. So I'm not really missing out. I can go and watch the movie.
I'm the opposite of you two. I actually used to love reading as a kid. And I do think children's books are, you know, there's so much imagination, mm-hmm, fantasy in them. You can really get lost in them. So I think there's a unique beauty to them. I would definitely reread some of those books.
Well, I'm reading them all for the first time now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I love, I'm loving reading children's books.
Do you have anyone to read them to?
I have my little cousins, actually, and I try to take to read books that they've bought to them when I sleep over, or when they sleep over at my house, or if I have a collection of short stories, then I'll try to incorporate it into what we're doing that night, always. And I can see a difference, actually. I see them getting excited over books now, and it is making a change.
You're such a good auntie. was it your cousins, you said?
My cousins, they're much younger than me, so I'm kind of like an auntie.
Well, 3 in 5 the people who were asked said that they would like to reread a childhood book. More than half of people said that they got feelings of happiness when they were reading a story from their childhood.
And if you've never considered rereading a book from your childhood, you might actually be missing out. The study revealed that 2/5 of adults use books from their childhood to spark their imagination, while 1 in 10 said they help when they need to be more creative.
Which is really interesting because I think we're in a creative job. I can't imagine turning to Alice in Wonderland. Like, oh, I've got this project I've got to hand in. I know what I'll do. I'll get out Alice. But I don't know. It's obviously got something in it.
It might spark something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got the top 10 children's books that adults like to reread here. Sonal, I think you're the only one who hasn't seen this list in full. Do you have any guesses on what could be in there?
Does Harry Potter count?
Harry Potter.
He's actually not in there.
No, I'm sorry, he's not in there. Any more before we move on?
Okay, I'll just give you mine. Definitely I think it's more young adult than children's. I don't know if it qualifies, but The Northern Lights, which was, I think, also known as The Golden Compass.
No. It's not in the top 10.
I had eclectic reading choices as a child, clearly.
All right, let's take a look at this top 10. At number 10, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Ooh. Who's read it? Hands up if you read that one.
I've watched it.
I've watched it.
Does that count?
Isn't that terrible? I've been to a dinner where they did it at a dinner once.
At a Litfest?
No, it wasn't. It was at a place that used to be called The Act, which is gone now. The Shangri-La Hotel.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's really cool. They did an Alice in Wonderland party. I know the story, but I don't think I've read it.
No, I don't think I have either. I saw it on someone else's list recently. Maybe I will.
I feel like when stories are so well known, you feel like you don't actually have to read them.
You think?
Is that it?
But I think there's a lot of hidden messages at Alice in Wonderland. You see, when I was a kid, I didn't actually enjoy watching it very much. But I think there's a lot in there because I keep seeing quotes everywhere. Whenever there's a lot of quotes, you know, there's a lot of morals, like Winnie the Pooh.
Yes.
Everywhere.
And you feel like you're missing out if you don't understand the quote that someone else is saying.
Exactly.
At number 9 is Lord of the Rings trilogy. Ugh, I wouldn't even want to read half of one, to be honest.
Is it a children's book?
I know, that was my thought.
I guess so. I guess it's a bit Harry Potter.
Huh.
If you think
about
it.
I feel like it's pretty dense to get through, even as an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't know because I haven't read it.
I wouldn't even watch the movie.
And at number 8, I thought this was part of Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit.
It is, but it's a separate book.
Haha.
As in, there's a connection in the stories. But it's
Wind in the
book.
Willows is at number 7. Have we all read that?
I don't think I even know that.
I think I read that at school. At number 6, Treasure Island, which was first published in 1882.
Oof.
I've never read it.
Me neither.
Animal Farm is at number 5, George Orwell. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes, I've read that one.
Number 4, seen the film. Number 3, The Railway Children from Edith Nesbit. At number 2, The Secret Garden, which was first published in 1911.
Yes, I've read that.
And at number 1, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
I want to read that. I think that was at the top. Yeah, that was at the top of the list. No, I need to read that.
I haven't read it either.
I haven't heard of it even.
You must have.
No.
Where they go through the wardrobe and they go to a magical wonderland.
I feel like they made a movie series as well.
Yeah, they did. That's worth checking out, I think. It's a good one. It's a good story anyway.
Yeah.
Right, is there a book not in that list that you read as a child that you wouldn't mind reading again? Let us know. We have got a whole host of travel books coming your way in just a second. We're talking all kinds of travel here. We are talking about somewhere far flung, home from work in the back of a Kareem, even just into the kitchen to make dinner tonight.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
We've got three members right here. We've got Ahlan Baluki, who runs the festival, the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. We have also got Sonal, who is the bookworm of us all as a child, who used to read all the time.
As a child. Two books a day I'd take out from the library. Wow. They weren't always the best books. Sometimes they were the Fear Streets and the sort of, what a trashy children's books, I guess.
Yeah. I think I had trashy children's books as well. But we've also got a lot of book club members who are texting in today because we were talking about a study that had been done on the book that you would reread from your childhood if you had to read one. And we've got loads of text messages coming in on this. The Famous Five, says Rohan. Ever read The Famous Five?
No.
Wasn't that Dame Jacqueline Wilson? I interviewed her once. She was amazing, I think
she was at the festival.
She's an amazing woman, right?
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's really great.
I just had flashbacks, actually. I've read the Goosebumps series. Do you remember those?
No.
They're kind of murder mystery.
Oh, really?
For kids, yeah. Huh. I just remembered, actually. I'd forgotten about those.
What about Little Women? Eleanor says it's my absolute favourite.
Yeah, we read it for school.
Harry Potter has also come up. The Indian in the Cupboard by Linisrid Banks, or Linicrid, and The Guard Dog by Dick King Smith. I read them to my children, says Leslie.
Nice.
That's really nice. Maureen says, I'm rereading my favourite book from my childhood right now. It's called Wrinkle in Time, which is the film.
With the Oprah.
Yeah, which is getting panned, but I've heard the book is meant to be amazing.
Gotta read that first.
Sahel says, as a child, I read a lot of Nancy Drew books and I still miss reading them. Go back! So hell, you can still read them again. And we had a text from Helen who said, I would love to reread Matilda by Roald Dahl. I remember reading that. That was a great book. An absolute classic. A unique, determined young girl using her talent to help others overcome things. And also a fabulous villain, Miss Trunchbull. I have subsequently named my daughter Matilda out of love for the name. So I'd love to read it with her one day. Isn't that gorgeous?
That's so sweet. And I have to agree, anything from Roald Dahl So magical.
Yeah.
I know.
Great books.
We asked the students at schools who their dream authors are and who they want to see at the festival. And so many people said Roald Dahl.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
And we're talking books for travel on a Monday on the Ticket. Travel anywhere, home from work, into the kitchen to make dinner, but also we're throwing in some travel inspiration. And that's where we're going to start today with your travel book. What did you go for?
This week I've chosen My Amalfi Coast by Amanda Tabor. And I chose this because that's probably my favorite trip that I've ever taken in my entire life. I went to the Amalfi Coast with my husband the year we got married. And it's just incredible. We went to Rome and we took the train to Naples. We had the best pizza in the world. And then we took a car from Naples all the way down the Amalfi Coast. And it's probably the top five best drives you can do in the world.
Yeah.
You see like the shore all along. And we went down to a little town on top of a mountain called Ravello. It's very, very small, but it's full of gardens and just very charming little coffee shops and restaurants. And there was a wedding happening and the entire village could see it. And it was just like so beautiful and picturesque. And then from there, we went down to Positano. And
beautiful.
To me, Positano is just the most beautiful, beautiful piece of land anywhere in the world. Like, it's just unbelievably gorgeous.
What did you think of Naples? Because Naples splits opinion.
We didn't stay long in Naples because we kept being told to be careful.
Yeah.
So they were saying, you know, we took the car from the train station with the driver. We're like, okay, well, we want to eat pizza, but can you wait?
Really?
And so we had all of our stuff in the car. He could have driven off with everything, but we hadn't paid him. So we thought he might stay. We went in, we had pizza. He waited outside and then we went down to, I don't know, I mean, maybe it's not that bad, but we kept hearing that we should be careful.
But I really love Naples. Like, I remember getting there with my friend and we hadn't heard anything about being careful. Yeah. So we were just going into it like, oh, this is cool. All the statues have graffiti on. This is amazing. And we wandered one night looking for a restaurant, and we must have wandered for an hour and a half just into the middle of nowhere. And we come across this tiny little restaurant, and working in it was a girl who was a waitress.
Yeah.
The son was the chef and the grandma owned the restaurant, and they're all there cooking up meatballs in the kitchen.
Same as the one that we went to. The owner was just walking around, serving tables. Yeah. And then, I can't remember his name, the Giovanni something. And he's like, I was like, Giovanni as in Giovanni, as in the name of the restaurant. He's like, yes.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Italy is just so beautiful. So the book that you've gone for, My Amalfi Coast by Amanda Tabor. We do have a little clip of Amanda here, just explaining.
Yeah, she's just explaining what the book is about and what you can expect to read.
My Amalfi Coast is a personal and loving account of the 18 years I lived and worked in southern Italy on the most breathtaking coastline in the world, the Amalfi Coast. I'll share with you my treasured secrets acquired over the years, like where to find the most superb classical concert at sunset, where to purchase beautiful creative ceramics. I'll introduce you to some of the truly talented local artists and guide you down cool, whitewashed alleys to the most delicious off-the-beaten-track restaurants. I'll enlighten you about some of the best treats on the coastline, the famous Amalfi lemon and the delicious buffalo mozzarella. I'll also share my intimate story of how I arrived in the jewel-like town of Positano, fell in love with the most handsome man on the coast, and recklessly abandoned my fashion career in the north to head south and live with him in a garage, waiting tables in his beach restaurant. I talk of the birth of our beautiful son and his idyllic childhood growing up painting beach pebbles and riding on a motorbike before he could even walk.
Oh, wow, that sounds awesome.
So this is the thing, right? When you go there, you fantasize about living that life because you meet all these people who have little businesses and shops and restaurants and this and that. They run for 6 months out of the year and they're closed out of the year. And so they run in the most incredible time. The weather is amazing. This tourist is so lively. And, you know, it's like a dream living there. And then, you know, you can take a holiday for 6 months out of the year.
Did you read the book before you went or after?
After, yeah.
If you'd read it before, would it have been good to go and check out some of these restaurants? But are they even still there, I wonder?
They might be because, Positano is so small.
Nothing much changes.
Probably, I don't know, 15 to 20 restaurants, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure. But I it's very small. Like, I feel like when you walk, you can walk from one end to another, and it's all uphill. So you go up and down, and there, you know where the good places are to eat, if you research and things like that. And, you know, that's what she's done. So she's done a mix of her story, where she actually did live the Amalfi dream, which is she abandoned her life and went and moved there, fell in love, started a business, became a mother, all of that, 18 years. I just thought it was really interesting.
Okay, it should come with a warning. Just be careful reading that book if you are going to get it. But check it out. It'll definitely inspire you to travel to Italy. And you'll have time in the summer. Everyone takes the holidays in the summer in Dubai.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
And if you go to Positano, also make a stop at Capri. We went for a walk. We stayed there for one night. We took a walk.
I went there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you see any celebrities?
I saw a wedding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which must have been one of the most expensive weddings ever, because to get married on Capri would cost a fortune. I didn't see any celebs.
That's what you would think, but I don't know. Talking about from a perspective, Emirati weddings, we spend a lot of money. So I don't know. You know, it's relative. It's relative.
Capri would be the cheap getaway wedding.
Maybe you're having it out in the open. Or
I'll tell you what we did do, though, in Capri. In fact, I'll tell you when we come back after the headlines.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
And we're doing it with Aklam, who knows her stuff. She is the festival director at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Now, we were just talking about the Amalfi Coast, and lots of people have been texting in, Capri, you have to go there. It was amazing. I went with my friend Lou, and it was my birthday. It was a birthday trip. And this is before we had husbands. We'd always travel together.
Yeah.
So for my birthday night, she had managed a year before we planned this holiday to book the most romantic place on the island for dinner for us. And it was a clock tower, and it had one balcony with one table for two people. And it's really hard to get this table on Capri. So we get there, and she's booked it for the sun going down and everything. It was just really, really awkward. So we sit outside having this dinner on the most romantic table on the island. And then the waitress brings us the birthday cake. And then she brings the bill afterwards. And then Lou complains about the price of the birthday cake. And it went from, I didn't think this could get more awkward, to, yeah, it totally can. And that's my Capri story.
My Capri story was, my husband was just about to go to sleep. I'm like, come on, this is our only night in Capri. We got to go for a walk. And he's like, okay. And then we went out. He got dressed. We went out and we walked for like 5 minutes. And he's like, Samuel L. Jackson?
What?
Yeah. And then he's like, hey, man. And then,
hey, man.
And then they like shake hands. He's like, I didn't bring my phone.
Oh,
we get a picture. And then we walk another 5 minutes and he's like, Magic Johnson?
That's amazing.
That was one hell of a night.
I don't have any celebrity stories from Capri. If anyone else does, 4001, please. I would love to hear them. All right, getting back into the books. And we have a book for after work. So you could read this maybe on the metro if you're catching it home. Or you could read it in the back of a Kareem. Where you cannot read it is if you are driving a car. We always say that, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Just in case it's not clear.
Or the audio version.
Yeah, you could take the audio version. That'd be safe enough. So what have you gone for this?
So I've gone for Pearls on a Branch. It's a translated book from Arabic, written by Nejla Gjersati Khoury. She's a Lebanese woman. And during the civil war in Lebanon, she used to go from village to village and with a theater troupe, and they used to perform these plays based on oral tales passed down for generations in Lebanon.
Storytelling,
yeah,
this is huge in the Arab world, isn't it?
It is, and you know, it's not a there's not a lot of books that are actually preserving all of the stories. There's so much folklore and so many fairy tales and stories about, you know, sultans and palaces and this and that. So this was a great example, and I think it's on the bestsellers. I went to Kinokuniya over last week to just look at what's new and what's on the shelves. And this was everywhere. So did you
read it in Arabic or did you read it in English?
No, I just read it in English. I only just discovered it.
Because I always wonder how it translates.
Mm. It's actually really good because I've read the English and it's very lyrical. And I wonder how they do that. Because if it's written poetically in Arabic, how do you translate it but make sure it's still lyrical in English? It's very difficult to do.
Can you read us an excerpt just to get an idea?
Yeah, sure. So the one that I can read you today is called King Solomon and the Queen of Birds. It may or may not be so, for it happened long ago, in the days before men used coins and minted gold, when goods were bartered, not bought and sold, King Solomon, peace be upon his soul, ruled with justice and clemency, we have been told. Every Friday, the king opened wide his palace gates and received all those who wished to see him. The people came, this one to report his news, this one to explain his views, one man to seek counsel, another to complain, some praising and thankful, others ready to blame. In those days, King Solomon conversed with all living creatures and addressed the animals in their own tongue. One morning, a chiff-chaff bird saw her reflection in the water of the lake and said to herself, "How beautiful I am. It is true, I am very, very small, but I wear a golden collar round my neck, and my robe is olive green and walnut brown, delicate and straight in my beak, and my posture most refined. Surely I am entitled to be queen of all birds."
Aww, so that's beautiful.
So on one of those Fridays when the palace gates were open, the little bird entered along with the other visitors. King Solomon, peace be upon him, received her, and she approached and said, "O messenger of God, behold, I am very, very small, but I wear a golden collar around my neck. My robe is olive green and walnut brown. My beak is delicate and straight is my posture and most refined. Surely I am entitled to be the queen of birds. Crown me, O King Solomon, make me queen of all birds." King Solomon replied, "We shall look into the matter." She came back the following Friday and pleaded and begged, "Let it please you, O King Solomon, to crown me queen of the birds." "All in good time," he said. She returned a third time, determined and persistent, saying, "I beseech and implore you, O King Solomon, crown me queen of the birds." But he shook his head and said nothing. After that, the little bird went back to the palace and stood before the king, threatening him and shouting at the top of her voice, "O Solomon, our king and sovereign, unless you make me queen of the birds and give me the crown, I will roll in the dust of your protected grounds. I will rub the dirt into everything you own, and what is now a palace will be your ruined home." The king nodded and said, "Little bird, I consent. But first you find me a wooden stick that is neither thin nor thick, a stick that is not green or dry or short or long. And as soon as you have done so, I will crown you queen of all the birds." So off the little bird went, flying and flying. She fluttered from tree to tree, hopping from this twig to that twig, turning her head right and left, and she looked and looked for the wooden stick. But every time she found a piece of wood, she rejected it, crying, "Tisk, tisk, no, no, it's too long, tisk, tisk. It's too short, no, too thick, no, too thin." The little bird has not stopped looking to this day. She hops and flutters and turns her head to right and left, searching with her interrupted chirp of tisk, tisk, no, no. You should see her for yourself, hopping and looking right and left. Because of her tisk here, tisk there, people start calling her Tisker. And her real name, Chiff-Chaff, also sounds like her chirping. The Chiff-Chaff is still looking for the wooden stick. That is neither thin nor thick, a stick not green nor dry, not short or long, to give King Solomon, so he may crown her queen of birds by and by.
That's so lovely. And that's so what people do with their kids, isn't it?
I want someone to read me that at bedtime. Can I give it to my mom?
Yes.
And ask her to read it to me?
I think it's a perfect one for bedtime.
Yeah.
And just short enough to read on your way home from work.
Mm, yeah.
Because if you have your head down in the back of a taxi for too long, we all know what happens. Start to feel a little bit queasy.
That's true.
Now, it's getting to summer. A lot of people are going to be going off on the holidays. Do we have any holidays booked?
Not yet.
I'm going to Bali in August.
Ooh. Ooh, so you're going to need a book for the plane.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm leaving to go to the UK in a couple of weeks, so I'm going to need a book for the plane. What have you got for us?
So book for the plane, I've got... this is an amazing book. It's called I'm Still Here by Clélie Avit. It's originally in French, called Je suis là. And I think anyone who's experienced having a loved one in a coma will appreciate this. The 29-year-old woman named Elsa, she's been in a mountain glacier accident and has been in a coma for 5 months. But what her family and friends don't know is that for the last 14 weeks, she can hear everything.
And they're thinking about turning it off, right?
Yes, they are.
It's my worst nightmare ever.
Because physically, she's not responsive at all. Her breathing is, just regular in the way that it is. There's no difference. There's no eye movement. There's no physical movement whatsoever, but she can hear everything. And there's chapters from her perspective where she's hearing what they're saying and how she feels about it. It's funny because physically she doesn't feel anything, so she doesn't feel cold, she doesn't feel scared, she doesn't feel any of those things, but she's very aware of what's happening. And one of the interesting things is that when she has nightmares, you know, a normal person would just shake it off and wake up. She can't do that. She just has to kind of see them and
see it through. That's horrible. This is like a horror story.
But what happens is one day a stranger walks into her room at the hospital. His name is Tybalt. And he just starts talking to her and describing in details what's happening around and just talks to her randomly. And she loves it. And he keeps coming back once a week. And she just hopes that he keeps coming back, and she looks forward to it more than she does her sister or her parents, who are talking about taking her on life support and things like that.
I bet.
But yeah, but it's very interesting, because you wonder, right? If you've ever had the loved one in the coma, you know, the doctors always tell you talk to them, they can hear you, but you're not really sure because there's no response. And then they say, you know, even if someone is terminally ill, they say the hearing is the last thing that goes, so keep talking to them and things like that. So it's an interesting insight into the mind of someone in a coma, whether it's true or not.
I can't even imagine that. That just makes me think of those nightmares that you have, where I don't know if this has ever happened to you, where I'm like, I know I'm waking up out of a nightmare, but my eyes haven't opened yet. I still haven't quite regained consciousness, but I know that I'm trying to wake up.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
can't. And that happens like just for a few seconds and I can't bear it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Or you're trying to say weeks. Something and your mouth just won't open.
Yeah.
And you just aren't able to get any word out.
How am I going to feel at the end of this book?
I've only read halfway,
oh.
so I'll, I can't wait to see what happens at the end,
Whoa,
actually.
Because so. I wonder how they're going to twist this. She's either got to wake up, right, or...
Or... Who knows?
Wow. Okay, you need to let us know. Can you be finished it by next week?
I'll probably be finished in the next 2 days.
Much? Okay, okay. Yeah. We'll find out then. We'll definitely find out.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter?
I am.
Can you tweet it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't want to give anyone any spoilers, though.
Well, I'll tell you what. What's your name on Twitter?
Just Ahlam Baluki.
Okay, let's follow you and just don't say what it's about.
Okay.
Just say, so, turns out that, and no one else will know what you're talking about, okay. only the people that care.
I'm going to tag you. Are you on Twitter?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Off air Steph. Excellent. All right, we've got that. Good pact.
Great.
We have had a text message from Timothy who says, that book sounds wonderful. Can you please tell me the details of the Arabic short stories book in Arabic and English? What was it called?
Yes, it's called Pearls on a Branch, Oral Tales by Najla Jreysati Khoury. So you should be able to get it at any of the bookshops here.
Kinokuniya.
I got it from Kinokuniya, yeah.
Kinokuniya.
Book World.
That's the one. Book World. We're going to be back with books for your little ones because they might be getting on a plane with you too. Obviously, they won't be sat in business. You will be. They'll be in economy.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
We always run out of time far too quickly, Ahlam.
I know.
Look at that. 7 minutes.
It's racing.
7 minutes. Okay, so we got some books to get through. Let's quickly do the one for the little people on the plane.
Okay. For children, I've got I Am Loved by Nikki Giovanni. It's a collection of 11 poems, but also amazing art in the book. I wish I brought the book for you to see.
I had a little look, actually. It's really bright. Great illustrations.
Exactly. It's amazing. It's just... And they say when a kid can see something written but also visual, it resonates a lot more. It's a lot more memorable. And the book is about feeling loved. And what I love is that on one of the pages, there's a mirror so that the kid can see who is loved. And it's like self-love.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. So a collection of poems...
It's hard to get kids into poetry as well, I think.
I know.
It can be.
It is. It's got to be simple, I think, and it's got to be a little bit more lyrical.
But Nikki Giovanni, she writes children's books, but she says she actually has quite a grown-up approach.
I don't think the children are stupid, and I don't think that I need to hold back on what I'm trying to say. And so what I do is tell the story, and I'm a big fan of the story. I don't think I have to talk down to children. I don't believe in that, and I don't think that I have to have a hidden meaning there. I think that my job there is to tell the story as clearly as I can. And so writing for children is the same as not writing for children, which is why some of my adult poems that I would have considered adult poems have become children's books without changing a word.
That's really interesting because I feel like I have quite a good relationship with children
mm-hmm.
because I treat them as little adults as well.
Yeah, nobody tells children the truth for some reason.
Mm.
I'm not sure why that is. They grow up and suddenly they're like, what?
And it's great because children always tell you the truth.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things is interviewing kids. I think that's what I'll miss, actually, from not working in radio anymore. I remember going to a school once, and there was a little girl then. She was so cute. And I had to interview her, and she looked at me, and she just went, "You look very casual today." And I was like, "Yeah, I guess I do. I just got out of bed like half an hour ago and rushed here." And she went, "Oh, my parents wear tuxedos to work." I said to her, "What do they do?" And she went, "They work in fruit and vegetables."
I was like,
"You probably just mean a tie." But you know those really honest conversations?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's very cute. So poetry for children written from someone who is not going to talk down to them. I really love that. And it's called I Am Loved by Nikki Giovanni, if you want to get that for the kids for the plane. Yes. But we got to get onto a cookbook because it's my favourite thing.
Yes.
And I think it's one of your favourite things isn't it? Talking cooking.
I love
cooking.
It, especially during Ramadan. Everything just looks so much more beautiful.
Because also you're on the countdown now, so you can start thinking about what's happening later.
Yes, I can.
All right, so what have you decided to go for?
Okay, so the book that I've chosen today is called Sirocco. It comes from the word sharq in Arabic, which means east. And the author is Sabrina Ghayour, who is a Persian-British chef. She's also the best-selling author of Persiana. You might remember that. That was on every bookshelf.
I do.
All of 2014 and 2015.
Yeah, great book.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And so the reason why I chose this is maybe I'm biased, but I love Middle Eastern flavors.
No, I love it as well.
I don't know, like it's just, you know, the spices are so aromatic, but not too spicy. Mm. And I feel like we've got the balance right in that there's the sweet and the savory. And it's just, you know, I also feel like we have a lot of vegetarian options, which is great.
And it feels healthy.
Yes. And especially, I mean, in this book, what she's done is she's taken Middle Eastern flavors and put it into the global format, if you like. So there's the salads and the dips and the lettuce wraps and, you know, the puffs and all of those things that we're all familiar with globally, but with Middle Eastern ingredients. So, and the good thing with Middle Eastern ingredients is a lot of the things that you buy, which we use in our food, is long lasting, right? So like sumac, for example, is one of the...
Sumac is one of the best things on earth.
It's amazing, right? Adds so much flavor, and it's something that...
It's so sweet.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Zaatar is the other one.
Yeah,
again, that's my fave.
Yeah, you can keep it for a year, more than a year. Use it. Pomegranate syrup, so pomegranate molasses. Amazing, so flavorful, and you can use it in everything. Saffron, same, so aromatic. You can use it everything, long lasting.
This sounds like a great book for here, where you can just go out and get all the ingredients you need.
Yes.
Because we sometimes struggle with that with cookbooks, don't we? That maybe not all of the ingredients will be here. Mm-hmm. They definitely will for this one.
Yeah, definitely. You can, I mean, all the good stuff. And just
throw some things at me that she's making in that cookbook.
Okay, so this one I love. It's a chickpea and potato latkes, she calls it, with mint and chili salsa. It looks like a kind of an Indian onion bhaji, but it has like
I need this book.
Middle Eastern things. Yeah, you definitely need it. I'm going to cook from this for sure this week.
Would be a great book if you're leaving, actually, to take with you, so you could carry on, because I'm moving to a tiny little village in Scotland and they're not going to have any great Middle Eastern food.
And you know what? Take some of these, like take za'atar with you, take sumac, take saffron. They're not heavy to carry. You can just put them in little bags and in a stash, and just you can cook with them wherever you go. There's a lamb, apricot, and fennel seed lollipops.
Oh, they look good.
Really, really good. Apple, sumac, red onion, and pomegranate salad.
Have you made any of these yet?
Not yet. No, I just found the book in the office the other day. I was like, oh, I'm taking it home. Slow roasted cherry tomatoes with goat's curd, pine nuts, and grape molasses. Looks great, doesn't it?
Grape molasses.
Yeah.
I've never tried grape molasses.
I didn't know grape could be molasses.
It's not Arabic, it's Persian. Mm. Yeah, so the pomegranate is Arabic. So this is all Middle Eastern. So it's an influence from Iran, from the Levant, from the Gulf states. So it's a mix of everything, but then also, you know, global.
I love it.
Chicken and apricot stew.
How complicated are these recipes? Is it good for people who maybe aren't so skilled in the kitchen?
No, they look pretty easy because they're like salads and they're bowls of things. And they're, for me, I stay away from anything I need to bake. I just have no idea. It's so, you have to be accurate with the temperature.
It's so random.
Yeah, I don't know how to bake. But everything else looks very easy to do.
Are you asking that from a point of view of I need it to be easy in the kitchen, Sonal?
I maybe was speaking about myself. Maybe speaking for a friend. I don't know.
Just getting to know you still. You're not much of a cook?
No, not at all.
Well, we're going to have a whole new list. We didn't get to the podcast this week.
No.
Next week is going to be our last Radio Book Club together.
Oh.
Have you got anything special planned?
Maybe murder mystery for you, Steph.
How exciting. You can text us as well, 4001. If you would like anything specifically for the next Radio Book Club, which will be the last one for now on the ticket, please let us know. Meanwhile, we're going to say goodbye to Akhlam. See you later.
See you later.
Bye. See you later.
Radio Book Club.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.